there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
The Robert Scott
the
Bell
Robert
Show.
Scott Bell Show.
Wake up, up, up.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Rise and shining. Wakey, waking.
Good morning.
Wake up, 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 up.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
And you.
And you.
Robert Scott Bell.
Knowing your Monday would not be complete without going Advanced Medicine Monday. Dr. Batar is back, and we are ready to kick off the week. Dr. Rashid Batar, how you feeling going into another week, heading into Halloween, I guess it is?
It feels fantastic, Robert. Feels great. I don't know why, but this week has something resonating about it. Maybe it's Halloween. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, the chocolate.
Oh, yeah. All the hopefully organic non-GMO chocolate we can eat. No.
Dark chocolate.
Yeah. Well, that is a big issue, of course. A lot of schools that are smart sort of shut down the day after Halloween because they know these kids are so hopped up on high fructose corn syrup, they don't want to deal with them. But there are ways to keep your kids safe for Halloween. I mean, we used to go out and they'd collect the stuff, and of course we'd turn it into the, I guess a dentist now buy this stuff and give them a buck for each pound or whatever. But please don't let your kids eat this stuff. I mean, you know better, don't you?
Exactly, and it's really the sugar that's a big issue. I personally think that chocolate is good, and especially the raw chocolate, it has a lot of health benefits to it. It's really the sugar that's a big issue. So I think it's not being accurate when we talk about chocolate, mm-hmm. chocolate. It's actually all the sugar that's put in the chocolate that really makes it such a problem. And of course, milk chocolate is has a significant sugar content to it. So if you keep the dark chocolate and try to stay away from the commercial brands and try to get raw dark chocolate, it actually has health benefits.
Absolutely. Our friends at Amy's Living Magic up there in Maine, they'll send us some care packages from time to time, and it is kind of the raw, dark, the real stuff. I was on the Jerry Doyle show last Friday, and he was asking me again about sugar. He seems to always, when I get on there, ask me about the whole weight issue and sugar. And I said, listen, when food was in its natural state, yes, it contains sugars, but it's a whole different interaction than when you add refinements to it. And you basically take that and then start adding all of these synthetic chemicals that make it colorful, or different flavors they add are synthetic. And then it's just not food anymore.
Oh, exactly. The coloring is a huge issue. And then, of course, the preservatives and then the various components that they put in there for emulsification and the preservatives, emulsification and the coloring are probably the worst constituents of the commercially bought chocolates, I would say.
Yeah, I remember when Dr. Russell Blaylock wrote about, I think it was excitotoxins, and realized, you know, that was a lot about artificial sweeteners, but sometimes parents will overlook all of these candies that are like day glow colors that don't exist in nature. You're asking for trouble whether it's high sugar or not at that point as well with the nervous system sensitivities.
You know, Robert, it's interesting you bring that up because when you start looking at some of these synthetic sweeteners, it's so counterproductive to what most people want to do as far as losing body fat and losing the unnecessary adipose tissue that they want to basically get into better shape. They want to look better for health benefits, whatever personal reasons, disappearance, vanity, whatever the reasons are. People try to get in shape and one of the things that we'd always talk about is the problems with sugar, which we obviously all know that sugar is a problem. But then people think that using the synthetic sweeteners is beneficial to them, whereas in fact, mm-hmm. the synthetic sweeteners are exponentially worse than using raw, real sugar. Mm. This is a huge issue with the sugar industry. In fact, it's the proverbial jumping right out of the fire pan into the fire, a worse situation. Mm-hmm. If you stand outside of a fast food a restaurant like a McDonald's or something, you know, the joke is if you look at the people that are ordering the Diet Cokes. And I've actually done this, Robert, and I've had numerous people tell me they've actually observed this themselves. They will watch the people that are ordering the diet soft drinks with the synthetic sweeteners and such, and they are, by definition, obese.
Well, yeah, by far. I mean, that was the irony of the diet or artificial sweeteners, in fact. And Blaylock knew this, too. He showed how it was like depleting serotonin levels in the brain, so you wouldn't even know when to stop eating. I mean, it just corrupted your metabolism.
And many people eat emotionally anyway, so when you're disrupting that cascade first, and then many of these synthetic sweeteners, for example, sucralose, it's a chlorinated sugar molecule.
Yes.
So now you're causing a decrease in the metabolic pathways. You're affecting the neurotransmitters that will have a direct relationship to the satiety centers of the brain, so you're not satiated. You don't know when to stop, as you just said. And then you go into all the other components with the toxicity from the chlorinated molecules and the detrimental effect that that's having. It's like a domino effect. Again, you hit that first domino and you create a cascade that you have no idea. But some people have said, oh, well, the reason that you see that is because the obese people are trying to lose weight. That's why they drink the diet drinks. And that's absolutely not true. It actually will slow down metabolism and contribute to fat accumulation.
Yeah, very important point. If you go out to any of the let's say the fair, state fairs or theme parks in cities around the country, you'll see a lot of these people on these scooters because they can no longer walk for a significant length of time or space. They can't move about, and without fail, they're consuming these diet sodas almost every. They're just convinced, and yet they don't look and say, "Wait a second, this isn't working. We got to try something different here."
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that a conventional standard non-diet soda is good for you. That's not what we're trying to say. We're trying to say that if you drink regular soda and you go to a diet, which a lot of people do because they think it's a health benefit, there's a perceived marketing concept here that it's a health benefit to go to a dietary drink. It's in fact going, again, as we said, out of the frying pan right into the fire. It's a worse situation.
Yeah, well, these things alter, let's say, metabolic interactions, normal metabolism. And we don't even just mean fat metabolism. A lot of people think about that. But the metabolic functions, meaning every cellular function, are corrupted when we throw these synthetic poisons, even in minute doses, into the body.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, in my book, I talk about the number of reactions that take place in the human body, but it's 100,000 reactions per second per cell in the body, and then look at how many quintillions of cells we have in our system. So you're really, truly shutting down the engine of the body. The cellular respiration, the cellular metabolism of the body is actually being shut down, whether it's direct or indirect. There's so many different aspects of how it affects it, but it's essentially shutting it down or slowing it down to a significant level that it might as well be shut down.
Yeah, these are the kind of things you would get if you come to the Advanced Medicine Seminar coming up in Houston, Texas, November 16th and 17th. It's a Friday and Saturday, and we're looking forward to seeing you there. I'll be there on Saturday. Healthcare providers, remember, you come both days, 16th and 17th, and it is a life-changing, and this is not an understatement. I'm telling you, when I went to the one in Philly with you, Dr. Bitar, we saw what was happening to people. They really got it on a very deep level. And even though we can go, as we do from time to time, into these, you know, some kind of detailed metabolic scientific explanations, we bring it back out into life itself. It's not divorced from life like so many of these scientists that kind of live in a lab and they never get out to see the world.
Yeah, this is the point of the whole seminar, Robert, exactly is what you just said. It's to bring practical information so people can start utilizing it day one. In other words, in fact, we had one of our subscribers to one of our lists, not a patient, that actually attended the seminar, and I didn't realize that till afterwards when they contacted us by email. And that was one of their key points that they made, that same day, before they even got home, back home from the seminar, they called their spouse and they made a change, and they've already seen in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they have actually seen a change just from making that one subtle change. In fact, it was about the A2 milk.
Oh,
yeah. Talk about there.
Yeah, we wanted to cover that today. This is interesting because as we talk about, let's say, synthetic chemistry altering metabolic functions, then we add to the mix, let's say, genetically modified organisms in food. Of course, we could go into the milk and talk about the recombinant bovine growth hormone. The regulatory authorities say, well, it's inconsequentially different. We can't tell the difference. Like, well, if you can't tell the difference, why did you spend billions of dollars trying to figure out how to tweak the genes? I mean, you wanted a difference, did you not? I mean, this is, they're speaking doublespeak here.
Well, absolutely. You know, the bovine growth hormones that have contributed to the insulin-like growth factor increase in milk, which has prevented it from being exportable from the United States into certain countries like Australia and certain parts of Europe. In fact, more and more countries are now outlawing U.S. milk. And then, of course, you look at all the antibiotics and all the components that are in the pesticides and the insecticides in the grain products that they use to feed the dairy cattle, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the whole casket gets really, really contorted. And it's, you know, that's all within what we're doing. And then, of course, there's the A1, A2 milk aspect, which I also write about in the book. And it was so interesting that one of the Amish people that came to the seminar in Philly,
yes,
he told me that actually he read the book, and he said that was the first time he ever read a book from a doctor that talked about that, and that's one of the big things that they're into. And of course, I'm into that too. So there's so many different components, but I thought it was interesting that that individual was able to implement that one change and start seeing a difference in their family in less than 4 weeks.
Yeah, and that is such so important. Now people don't have the time to wait around, you know, and try to figure out how do I. Well, that was an interesting thing, that theory what they were talking about, but what do I do with? You know, you go home, you're like, that sounded really good, but no, everything that I heard and that we were able to present at the Advanced Medicine Seminar was something that people could immediately implement into their lives and see the change, not just wonder, oh man, I hope I get lucky and some change happens.
Exactly. And the nice thing is that we've got some other components that we're still working on where they're tools and they're resources that will make life even easier, but they weren't left with the thought that, okay, in 2 weeks, in 2 months, in next year, I'm going to have this resource. They left with practical things that they could implement right away, and then they've still got the bigger, better things coming down the pipeline. These are things, that two different categories. One, things mm-hmm. that you can do yourself to self-empower yourself, your family, your loved ones, information that you can utilize, as you said, on a practical level. But the other component is also having the information coming down the pipeline in the future for the resources that will actually make life easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're referring to like the AHEAD map and some of those things.
What did you say, the AHEAD map?
Yeah, the AHEAD map, the Advanced Health Evaluation Assessment for Detoxification Medical Assessment Program.
Right.
And some of these other things with the RAPTD, with autism and stroke and some of those components, which aren't going to be implementable for a person themselves. They'll have to find a healthcare provider that has gone through the training, et cetera. But the point is that's the whole reason for having the healthcare providers and the public together.
Exactly.
So that it's a partnership. It's a relationship. It's an educational component, which physician, as you know, means to teach. And so a lot of doctors, unfortunately, don't have the right information to teach. And so we're hoping to have an impact on both the general population as well as the healthcare provider.
Dr. Bitar, that's one of the most gut-wrenching emotional aspects what I hear from listeners that are at a place where, yes, they can implement things, but they're almost too far gone. They've been so abused by the medical profession in so many ways that now they're just trying to rebuild, put the pieces back so they can even think about implementing some of these things. And so you mentioned that, and I want to add that to what you just said. For the Advanced Medicine Seminars, one of the most profound things is you will, as a lay audience too, to come into this seminar, will be rubbing elbows with doctors that you can talk to. I mean, that they're there. Many of them have had the training with you, Dr. Bitar. Some are going to get it. But now you'll know who are the good people you can work with that will help to rebuild your health.
Yeah, energetically, that's a key point, Robert, because the fact that a physician, healthcare provider actually comes to one of these seminars as opposed to many of the other medical seminars that may be out there, I believe there's a spiritual reason for it. And I know that sounds really a strange thing, but this happened back in AMSPA when we started in 2005. If there is one word to describe the doctors that have come through my training program, it would be a spiritual connection. And it may sound somewhat esoteric, but they have to be aligned in the right manner. If a doctor calls me and asks me, in fact, our past executive director for AMSPA, after the second time, would laugh. And if a doctor wanted to talk to me or ask me any questions about the seminar, if they should come, my answer categorically was no.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they have to ask me, should I come to your seminar?
Yes.
They're not the right person. They don't get it.
They don't get it. That's right. There's that heart connection. Listen, we got a great email coming through the website at robertscottbell.com. We've got the links up today, as we always do, with Dr. Bitar, the 9 steps to keep the doctor away, the international bestseller. If you've not gotten that book, it is life-changing. And from the moment you start reading it, you can start implementing the things we talk about here on Advanced Medicine Mondays. We'll get more information to you about the Advanced Medicine Seminar coming up in November, just a few weeks away in Houston, Texas. And, of course, your health questions. We've got them here on the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Bitar. Stand by. Coming right back.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
On bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Once again, remember, Advanced Medicine Seminars coming up, Houston, Texas. The links are up to advancedmedicineseminars.com, right in the show notes at robertscottbell.com, to everything we do here with Dr. Rashid Bitar each week. And we have a great email letter that came through the website, Dr. Bitar, from Kevin, and we appreciate you writing in, Kevin. It says, "Hi, thanks, Robert and Dr. Bitar, for answering my question. What I read was not in a study. It was a product description that had read selenium was essential for the functioning of the biologically important enzyme glutathione peroxidase, an antioxidant whose primary role is in the destruction of hydrogen peroxide," as he said. Oh, I remember this question we answered, I think, last week. We weren't sure where he was going with it, so he got
from a
label. He says, "I like how you and the doctor talk about the role emotions play in disease. I know that early childhood trauma started my lifelong illness, but eating two packages of Pop-Tarts for dinner in high school didn't help either." Good point there. "Call it fate, but the week before you answered my question and brought up emotions and disease, I decided to do three things. One, feel God's love for myself. Two, love myself. Three, forgive, forgive, forgive. And when I do this, I feel the emotions in my heart center in the middle of my chest also. I like to throw in something I learned from Neville Goddard and Greg Braden, that is to feel you are already healed and feel gratitude in your heart center for being healed." I mean, this is the heart of what we were trying to relate. It's getting out there, Dr. Bitar.
Yeah, it really is cool. My very first advice to any of my patients that come to me for cancer, for example, and this is whether or not they've decided to pursue treatment with us, just the very first time, and sometimes the only time I talk to the person, if they choose not to, you know, continue, is that one advice. Number three is to forgive, forgive, forgive. And it's not, you're not forgiving the other individual. We've talked about this on the show, Robert. Mm-hmm. You're not forgiving the other individual because they are, you know, good, or because you acknowledge that maybe you misunderstood. It's nothing about that. It's not because they deserve the forgiveness. It's because you yourself deserve to forgive them, so that you're not carrying that baggage, as we've discussed many times, which will result in that abscess inside, that festering mm-hmm. infection type scenario inside your body, which then eventually leads to that cancer. And so I've always told patients that have chronic disease that you don't have the luxury of holding a grudge against anybody. Mm-hmm. So this gentleman's advice, Kevin's suggestion over here of the forgiveness, is such a key component to that, eliciting that healing cascade.
Yeah, it's beautiful when this comes back around. Like I said, we certainly can go into egg-headed stuff, and we do from time to time. But I know I love the passion, like when we were together at the Advanced Medicine Seminar. You felt, you said it, spiritual, emotional, and we're not talking about 501c3, you know, divisions between people. We're talking about a connection that we all know and recognize we have. We can feel that kind of energy. I mean, he goes on, he says, we're nothing if not our emotions. And the suffering that we, let's say, bring upon ourselves by either in ignorance of what our experiences were or by suppressing them as opposed to trying to work through them and heal them. And there are many ways to get there. But, wow, what a profound thanks. And, Kevin, we really appreciate the nice message there.
Yeah, whenever it comes back, like you said, full circle, it means that it's getting out there, and that's what we're doing it for, so.
Absolutely. Now, I think about the next generation. We do our level best to apply what we learned in our lives, Dr. Bitar, coming up through our generation, and try to do it differently for our children. You know, I know growing up pharmaceutically, chemically, and saying, oh, I want to give my kids a better opportunity to eat well and stay clean, not be vaccinated. And yet that puts them in an unusual position because they're still in an incredible minority. As we said, there may be as much as 2% of the population in America that have said we're opting out of vaccines, which on one level is small. Another, we recognize it's growing very rapidly. But still, our kids are in environments, whether they're in government schools or private schools or Montessori schools, where they don't really have a peer group in the same way we did.
Yeah, that's a very true statement. My children know that if anybody ever tells them that they should get a shot, they need a shot, they must get a shot, In fact, Rahan, my youngest, has been taught, you know, the same thing that Abby was taught. It's the same as somebody trying to grab you and run with you. You know, yell, scream, kick, stranger, danger, yell it, whatever you need to if somebody ever tries to give you an injection. I mean, that's the point that I've taken my kids to, and I know you've probably done something similar with your children.
Well, my son's favorite quote is my favorite quote from Michael Bednarik. Doc, you bring the syringe, I'll bring the 45, and we'll see who makes a bigger hole. Now, I know that's politically incorrect, but listen, we got to understand there's a First Amendment and a Second Amendment, and I'm raising my kids to understand that. And, yeah. And you know, that the right of self-defense is something that cannot be taken away lest you become a slave.
Well, I totally agree with you, Robert. And I'm, you know, with Avi, it's one of those things that I know he can defend himself. With Rahan, he's a wild man anyway. He's very small. But, you know, Avi, I think Avi could take me out easily.
Wow, yeah, I know what he's developed. Now, Elijah had to deal with this in school the other day because one of his friends in his middle school peer group, if I can call it that, got the flu shot, and they were all talking about it, and my son just says, listen, the flu shot's not good, and, you know, he went to rattle on why. Now, I heard back from the teacher that some other teachers heard about it, and they were shocked and appalled and upset, and they said, we can't have him talking about that, but God bless my son's teacher. She said, no, there's a First Amendment. We need to be able to speak. We can't shut down freedom of speech in this school. We have to allow these kids to discuss and debate the issue. They don't have to come to fisticuffs over it, but you can't suppress one viewpoint because you don't like it. And I thought, man, are we blessed to have a great perspective because, as I said, not many kids understand what our kids understand.
And not many teachers would have understood that either. So that's really cool to see that because beating people into uniformity and expecting them to toe the party line is what has led to our nation declining. I mean, mm-hmm. We were the best nation on the planet. We had the best healthcare. We had the best educational system. You know, now we rank, 40th in healthcare and 36th in education. And economically, evidence is all around us that we're not the best of what we used to be. And so I think the reason we got there was because of the constitutional freedoms that we had and the violation of those freedoms and the overregulation. Again, I think I'm getting political here.
No, it's okay. But listen, you mentioned a word, conformity. And this is a big problem of what happened within the medical profession, which is why you got so much backlash because you wouldn't conform. You said that's lunacy to do what you're doing. You're creating disease instead of undoing it.
Well, Robert, you know, it's interesting you bring this up. I didn't tell you this. The medical board, you know, has been sending letters about this concern, that concern. There was a deadline for a letter that had to been filed on Friday, and I just sent the response back, and it wasn't what my attorney wanted. I did tone it down slightly, he said, okay, well, this version is less caustic than the other one. So he goes, I know you feel strongly about it, but he said, you know, simply, you just have to tell them what you think, but you don't have to go into it. And I mean, I was irritated with it.
Sure.
It basically said it was about the effectiveness of our treatments and that, you know, potential that it could be misconstrued as a violation of my consent order that I wouldn't say that how effective our treatments are. Well, first of all, we've never said anything about effectiveness of our treatments. Our patients have said how effective our treatments are, and the evidence is out there. But my response was, well, after reading my website and looking at the letter from the medical board, I don't see how that could be construed, that's not a violation of any consent order. In fact, I don't think that any reasonable person of any reasonable intellect could see how that would be a violation of consent order.
Right.
We said our treatments are so effective that the medical board is suppressing it. I'm not making that's what I said. And I, wow. You know, that's what their issue is.
Right.
I said, I'm not making any claim of any treatment. I'm not making any claim. 59 different treatments. I would do 59 different IVs that we do that the medical and our treatments are so effective the medical board suppressing us. But the consent order says that I'm not going to make any specific claim about curing any specific disease. I said, I haven't made
any claim on that.
And
no.
I haven't said any treatment.
Yeah, there is no claim to what it is specifically doing. But remember, too, in your travails through the legal aspect of the board attacks, that when presenting people that were actually healed, I mean, living examples, living testaments to the effectiveness of the treatment, they said that that was irrelevant.
That's right.
So what
does
that tell you about their do they have any genuineness about the process at all?
Well, you know, that's really, I'm glad you remembered that, because that one word, after testimony of five different stage four cancer patients that are now, you know, still alive, that were given 3 to 6 months to live, and they were all 3 years or more out.
Yeah.
And their response was that it was irrelevant. Shows that the agenda has nothing to do with the public safety. It has all to do with propagating their monopoly, as you have pointed out, the military, industrial, pharmaceutical complex. In fact, the military component, it's not the military itself, obviously. It's those that control the military, the political aspect. We should actually change that. Instead of saying the military, industrial, pharmaceutical complex, we should say actually the political, industrial, pharmaceutical complex.
Yeah, well, you're right, because when politics gets involved in there, it screws it all up, because the whole intent of a military by design constitution is for defensive purposes, and you're darn straight you want them there when you need them, just like you want your immune system there when you need it. But when it goes on political offense, it exhausts itself to the point of disease and creates autoimmunity where we end up killing ourselves.
No, you're absolutely right, but the problem is it's not the military's fault. It's the people that wield the power to tell the military what to do. Because the military's purpose is really to ensure peace. That's the only – I mean, why does a person learn how to fight? Why does a person learn how to defend themselves? Not to go out there and pick on somebody. It's to ensure peace. The stronger you are, the more you're able to fight, the more you're able to defend yourself, there's going to be less likelihood that somebody else is going to come and pick a fight with you. And so the whole purpose of being strong, of having a strong military, is to ensure peace. But it's when, as you said, the political component starts to dictate how the military is going to be misused and abused in order to carry out their agenda. That's why I think we really should change that name, that terminology, Robert. In fact, I make a motion that we change that military, industrial, pharmaceutical complex to the political, industrial, pharmaceutical complex.
Well, when Eisenhower warned us about the military, industrial complex, he did it. There was an expansion on that, because he talked about it as the congressional military, just like you said, political or slash congressional, because it was the recognition that Congress politicians would be utilizing it for their own gain. And, of course, then you get into the private contractor aspect of having a monopoly on something, and then you funnel funds into it, and it becomes, again, an economic boon, but a disaster to everybody else. And you're right. The reason to have a strong military is so you don't have to use it. But the politicians want to have to use it from time to time to show, hey, look how big and bad we are. In fact, we want to mold you in our image, because, look, we love democracy, even though the Constitution says nothing about it. We need to export that to you, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that the concept of freedom, I've heard so many politicians say that, you know, they hate us over there, wherever over there is, because we love freedom and they don't. That's the most ludicrous and... I mean, that statement just resonates with imbecile written all over it. The reason people hate us in different countries is because we have 720-some bases all over the world. And if somebody was, excuse my French, taking a crap in your front yard, wouldn't you be upset about it?
Heck yeah, I know. That's the thing that seemingly the establishment, and I would say this, establishment Democrats and Republicans refused to see. That's what the Ron Paul Revolution, a big part of it, was about. It's like, listen, you want to lead the world, lead by example. Don't lead by forcing somebody to do it at the point of a gun, because, you know, it's like, you can say, here, give me all your money and I'll make you charitable. That's not charity.
Yeah, exactly.
Unreal. So we want to bring healing to you, because the power to heal is yours, as we remind you every day here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. We ramp it up even higher with Dr. Batar with Advanced Medicine Mondays, Medical Rewind. Check it all out. The links are up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. All the archives, man, do we have some great shows for you. You can get them through medicalrewind.com, or we link through the archives at Natural News as well. So stand by. We got lots more healing to go on the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Batar after this.
The Robert Scott, the Bell,
Robert
Show.
Scott Bell Show.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Fascinating discussion, as always, with Dr. Batar here on Advanced Medicine Monday. We were talking about peer groups with the kids, and also the conformity aspect. That what happened to America is that we became conformed. We conformed to somebody else's ideal, and that ideal was not a high ideal. It was a very low ideal. Mediocrity would be I guess, a compliment to what a lot of people have embraced, whether it be in the medical realm, whether it be in the political realm, the economic realm, so many of these realms. And we've lacked the imagination to see that we've abandoned imagination to see what we could be creating rather than what we've accepted by others throwing upon us, these blankets to dampen consciousness.
Robert, you know, you're opening up a whole can of worms now, because this is one of my really, really favorite things to say, is that the imagination of our younger population has been systematically eliminated. A teacher will walk up to a child who's daydreaming, looking outside the window, and demand that they pay attention to the board that they're talking about, whatever they're talking about. But, you know, it was that imagination that allowed somebody to contemplate, to actually conceive of the possibility of achieving flight, of achieving space travel, of achieving opening up the body and being able to do a certain intervention that no other way you could do it, or whatever the case is. It was that imagination that allowed for those possibilities to occur. And when you force everybody to conform into one certain thought process, as you said, like with your teacher for your son, and they said that, no, you need to be able to debate it. That's just one aspect of it, to be able to debate and discuss.
Yes.
But then to allow that imagination to feed it and to nourish it and to encourage it so that new thoughts can come in. We have completely abandoned that, completely. It's if you sit there and you daydream, if you have any new innovative concept or thought, you are punished. In medicine currently, anybody who does anything outside of the standard is punished in a very aggressive and violent way, and with the threat of taking their livelihood away, their, you know, houses and homes and freedoms away. They're doctors that have been put in jail, healers that have been put in jail for doing nothing but helping somebody get better when the standard establishment couldn't do anything anymore. So our system is massively imbalanced, and we are at the height of needing, dare I say, a revolution.
Well, an imagination revolution or infusion.
Yeah.
And it isn't like that, let's say there's zero imagination. We'll let you have imagination as long as it stays within the four corners of this box, right? And that's where in modern medicine they say, well, we have made advancements in cancer therapy and treatment. Listen, you might have found a way to alter a molecule, or they might have found a way to genetically modify something, but that has nothing to do.
They haven't done crap.
Exactly.
Robert, you and I both know that. Stop sugarcoating it and say it for what it is. They haven't done anything. They've made it barbarically worse. The only industry that I see innovation constantly occurring on a daily basis is the telecommunications computer industry. And if medicine was the same as the telecommunications or computer industry, we would still have a laptop the size of a small building. You and I have talked about this before, even on the air.
Yes.
It's archaic what we've done. And the problem is that our mistakes in the profession of medicine causes people to die. It is not that you lose an internet connection and can't get an email off and you can't browse the internet because you don't have the latest and the greatest. It's because the consequences of our inadequacy in the medical profession cause loss of life, and that is not tolerable.
Well, we open talking about sugar-coated and artificially sugar-coated. We don't do that here, as Dr. Batar just lets loose, as he should. And you're right, the imagination deficiency. We can talk about the political realm, the whole idea of the monopoly of, oh, yeah, you can choose whoever you want as long as they're a Democrat or Republican. Go back to communist Soviet Union and say you can have any color car you want as long as it's black. That's what we're talking about here in so many areas of life. We become conformist, we become collectivist, and therefore we collectively decline and decay.
You're absolutely right, Robert. And that's what needs to be changed.
Yeah. Well, listen, we got to make some changes. There are some changes on the horizon. Six European countries have just recently pulled Novartis flu vaccine. Speaking of the flu shots, our kids know better. Now some European countries might be getting word about this.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting that you've got the flu vaccine on one side. They're pulling the countries that are refusing the Monsanto GMO foods. The countries that have internal conflicts in allowing Monsanto to come in. So, yeah, of course, the awareness is getting out there. That's one reason when you said 2% of the population by the vaccines. I remember when you and I had that discussion on the air a couple of weeks ago, I told you that that's hard for me to believe that's only 2% of the population. I think that maybe 2% of the population are as passionate as you and I are, but I think a lot more people know about it, and some are still on the fence and some are trying to learn more about it. But, you know, I just had my, believe it or not, I called my plumber a couple days ago because doing some stuff here on the ranch and needed some galvanized pipe from old wells if they had any. And he said, oh, yeah, yeah. He goes, by the way, Dr. Tarr, I just want to let you know, remember when you and I talked about my son who had this, you know, he had some medical problem that they diagnosed him with and he needed some advice. And I said, yeah, I remember. And I said, how's he doing? He said, he's doing great. And I did exactly what you said. And he goes, you know, my second son that was just born, when you talked to me then about the vaccines and I asked you about that and you said, if it was my child, I wouldn't let anybody within, you know, 20 feet with a vaccine in their hand.
Yes.
He said, I just want to thank you for that. He goes, my wife is somebody that, you know, takes care of all this stuff. And I told her that and she didn't understand why, but he goes, she's your biggest fan now. I've never met his wife. Mm-hmm. You know, they're probably about 30 miles away from here. And he goes, she's talked to, you know, literally hundreds of people. And she said, he's right. Dr. Tarr's right. And there's no way my kids, after doing her own homework, getting on the internet and doing her own homework. And so I think there's a lot of people like that that may not know, but really do want to know. And I think that population is far greater than that 2%.
You're right. And when we speak in the way we do, with the posture and the energy that we bring to it because of our own experience, it's different than those that are vacillating and are not sure. And having that strength of these words coming out and vibrating in this way, it changes consciousness. That's the point of it. You receive it because you had the radar for it, but no one was sending the signal out. Suddenly it hits and you're like, oh, of course. And now suddenly you're a different person, so to speak, in that moment. And now the same thing you could have been victimized moments earlier, no way they can do it anymore.
That's a great analogy, that the signal was being you had the receiver, but the signal wasn't being sent. That's a great analogy. And, you know, you bring up about those six countries. Which six countries actually received the signal? I don't even know what the
Here, Austria, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and Switzerland have now limited the use of Fluad or Agripal or both after the company reported the appearance of small particles in the vaccine to Italian authorities. Now, we recognize it's a much bigger issue than just finding, oh, it's contaminated, because we believe even prior to any level of contamination, the whole basis is just bunk. But yet the CDC, because they don't listen to their toxicologists, keep going with the virus hunters and say, hey, we even want all you pregnant ladies out there to get whooping cough vaccine now.
Yeah, I saw that story that you sent me about that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, who's in control over at CDC? We've acknowledged, because you know firsthand, there are toxicologists at CDC that get it, but they don't have any power, seemingly. If they do, we rarely get to see it exerted unless there's an overt toxic spill somewhere.
Well, I think it's one of the problems of playing the same political game. You know, there are two or three that are aware, and they maneuver however best they can, because their agenda isn't to win the argument. Their agenda is trying to bring the information into a way that the public can benefit from it, those two or three that get it, you know, at the CDC. Mm-hmm. The rest of them, it's just a political body. They're just they're towing the party line. They're wheeling and dealing. In fact, I was told that when the cigarette ban issue came up, you know, there were so many things happening in Congress and so many deals that were being made. And then the CDC, you know, gets calls from different senators, different congressmen. You know, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And so they have to basically, who is their master is the question.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And you follow that, you begin to see how this world works. And that's why we do this show every week and additional 5 days of the week as well. And I hope that you'll all plan to come down and see us in Houston. Dr. Batar is hosting the next Advanced Medicine Seminar there, November 16th through 17th. We've got the links directly there. Sign up, healthcare providers, both days. Those in the lay audience, come on down Saturday of the event. I'll be there. We'll have a great time. And this is the kind of thing that can even ramp up even further in person. So we look forward to that, Dr. Batar. Listen, I'm going to take an early break so we can come back. I wanted to talk about asthma. You mentioned the A1, A2 milk, and I know there's a relationship there, and people really need to hear this. I don't think it's getting out in the old media. So stand by. We'll come back with Dr. Batar, talk about that and more.
You're listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show. In the health world through the power of radio, it's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Remember, you can always call us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 866-939-BELL. If you have a question for Dr. Batar, we'll get it on the air, 866-939-BELL, or send it to the website at robertscottbell.com, or, hey, just show up in person, Houston, Texas, November 16th, 17th. We're looking forward to seeing you there. Dr. Pitar, you mentioned the A1, A2 milk issue. We've mentioned it from time to time, but the relationship to respiratory ailments, asthma, allergies, I think you've been involved in animals like this, so I think you can let loose on this subject as well.
Well, actually, I wrote about it in the book too, Robert. Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, the editors may have taken out a little too much on that issue, but there's a couple, maybe a page or two on that in the book, in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away. But this is another example of how much information that the general public needs to know. And one of the examples that we used earlier that a person was able to put into practice within a four-week period after the seminar and were able to actually see a difference in their own family. And it's about the A1, A2 protein that you just talked about. Beta casein protein has it's a 209 amino acid sequence that's found in milk. And, you know, we talk about all the components in milk, all the homogenization and the pasteurization aspect and organic milk versus non-organic. We know the organic milk is far better than any other type of milk, but and the homogenization, pasteurization does denature the milk and does reduce the bacteria in there. So raw milk is obviously the best, but it's illegal to sell raw milk in many states. And we've discussed some of those things in the past. But even if you get raw milk that's not homogenized, that's not pasteurized, that's organic, there's still a component within that milk, whether it's A1 or A2, and that's this beta casein protein that we're talking about. The A1 milk has on the 67th amino acid in this 209 amino acid sequence protein, the 67th amino acid happens to be histidine, versus on A2 milk, it's proline. And proline, the bind with the proline in the A2 milk is a much tighter bound protein, whereas one with the histidine in A1 milk, it's a weaker connection, a weaker link, and it allows for the protein to essentially break down. And this this breakdown that occurs through the process of digestion creates this problem with the protein fragment called the beta-casmomorphin 7. Essentially what it is this A2 protein is so much more beneficial for the human system because it doesn't allow the protein to break down. And so it's not seen by the body as being foreign, whereas the A1 protein, because it's a weaker link at that 67th amino acid sequence, breaks down and the two fragments are not seen as milk anymore. They're seen as foreign substances in the body, theoretically, responds in a manner that would be analogous to an allergy situation. So there's an allergenicity component here that is initiated. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that the A2 protein is a protein, or the A2 milk is found in A2 animals. You have an A1 or A2 that's given by the mother and the father, so the animal can be A1 or A2 or heterozygous A1, which would be A1, A2, or homozygous A1, which is both A1s from both parents, or A2, which is both A2 from both parents. And in the European older animal population, the Eurasian strains of these animals, they're primarily A2. In America, it's primarily A1 animals. By the way, it's not just the milk. It's even the meat from the A1 versus A2 cows is better for consumption for the human body.
Right.
So A2 is better, but it's relatively – I thought it was very rare. It's really not as rare as I thought, but it's relatively minuscule compared to the A1 protein. Here in the United States, it's something like 95%, 98% of milk is A1, and maybe 3-5% is A2.
And Dr. Pitar, you mentioned the Amish that came to the last Advanced Medicine Seminar. They were very aware of this because they know about the old world, the old school kind of thing of these the difference here.
Absolutely. In fact, I found out that the reason they came to the seminar is because one of them had read that in my book and said, we need to go hear this doctor speak. And it was just that one fact that I'd had in the book that brought that group of people in. But yes, they are very aware of it. In fact, I'm in the process of getting A2 cows, dairy cows, for my own family and for our own farm use.
Beautiful. And we actually have access to some raw milk. Of course, we buy it for our pets that we don't have every week. and we do very well with that. And, my kids love it, and they're doing well.
We can find that on our side, though, Robert, because we have so many animals here. But
yeah.
But you're right. I mean, you can use it if you own it yourself,
mm-hmm.
But you can't purchase it. It's illegal to sell it. And if you can get it, you should get it. And whether you get it under the pretense for your animals or for yourself, and theoretically, if you knew my kids, they are like animals. So
that's right. They're not containable. But we don't want them to conform. Yes, we want them to be very individual in this. And this is another level of understanding here that we, as I said, we can get very complicated and complex about some issues, and sometimes it's necessary to talk about that. But sometimes the facts, you know, boil down, you get to the basic level of how do we implement? How do we integrate this information and live life? And that's the practical aspect of this. That's the practicality that exists in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away. Also, the Advanced Medicine Seminar coming up in Houston, and what we do here every week, Dr. Batar, which I appreciate so, so very much.
Well, Robert, I just wanted to say on the last note, I know we're probably running out of time, but the A2 milk is something that this particular individual was able to secure, and they saw an improvement in degenerative joint in one of their in-laws, and they saw an improvement in the reactive airway of one of the children. And you will have an association with improvement of overall health if you consume A2 milk versus A1. If you go to Wikipedia, it's very interesting that they, you know, the exact thing that they say is that A2 milk contains the A2 type beta casein protein rather than the more prevalent A1. The milk is branded by A2 Corporation and mostly sold in Australia, New Zealand, and now in the United Kingdom. There is no consensus that A2 milk has benefits over A1 milk. There is consensus, and it's very, very evident. In fact, there's a great book by Keith Woodford called Devil in the Milk. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people to read that, or, you know, if you want a quick synopsis of it, it's in my book as well. But essentially, this is a very big thing. And if you can get A2 milk, I would encourage people to get it and consume it as
give it a try.
But
your body is the proving ground. Try it out. If it works for you, you got it. If not, hey, no biggie. There's a lot of other foods out there, but we wanted to cover this one today. Dr. Batar, thanks so much. Keeping the kids safe for Halloween as well. We look forward to having you on next week and look forward even more to seeing you in Houston at the next Advanced Medicine Seminar.
I look forward to it too, Robert, and you be careful on Halloween too.
We'll do it. In the meantime, everybody, remember, it's true. The power to heal is yours.